Good morning and welcome, everybody. You have tuned in or stayed with us for a Jump in Tucson. And this is the Engagement Hour. I am Ted Maxwell, and behind the glass, as always, is Matt Neely, keeping me on time and on target. I'm going to go back to what the words that I always like to say at the end of the bottom of the hour, but I'm going to start with them today because I think it's important. We are a nation bound by shared values of freedom, liberty, and equality. And with that comes some rights and responsibilities. For some, that includes service to our country and our community. We've just finished an election season, the first show I've been on since the results started coming in. And over that time period, we've seen a pretty broad landslide across the nation, or a pretty big statement to support President Trump as the 47th president of the United States. And we've also seen the opportunity for what I would say was elections that seemed to go pretty well. Overall, they were considered fair. They were considered honest. In my mind, they were no different than the last one. But this one, the results were different. So the mantra is a little different. And that's, I think, in part because we've gotten out of our idea of being citizens in this country, and we've gone more to being citizens in a party or in a desired outcome. And we keep forgetting that we really all do value being Americans. We still live in the greatest country in this world. There's no doubt about it. But in Arizona, because of how we conduct our elections, we've kind of become the butt of several jokes. I mean, Matt, the Babylon Bee, really, the Babylon Bee.
We made the Babylon Bee.
And if you make that, you are getting attention throughout the country.
The satirical headline was, Arizona announces that it has counted another vote. Like, one vote.
One vote. So, yeah. One at a time. And there's a lot of controversy about it, but I heard during the news segment as you were leading in, Matt, and one of the things you said, and it was something I was going to talk about this morning, is we need to make some constructive change to how we conduct our elections in the state of Arizona.
Yep.
But it doesn't really take much. I'm glad Senator Peterson is engaged. I'm glad he's trying to come up with something that whatever the plan is, whatever their idea is, you know, going to Florida and say we're going to import Florida. Yes, Florida does a good job at counting their elections. They get it done. But the difference is Florida doesn't have the tight races we do. That's one of the challenges we have. We've got so many tight races because we are a little more than a third Republican, about a third independent, a little less than a third Democrat. So we have tight races in the state.
Sure, but I do hope they at least look at their model for how they conduct and count and glean what they can from it. I certainly think it would.
Absolutely. And I hope what Senator Peterson does, and we'll be reaching out to him on behalf of SLC and others. I've already contacted several of other business organizations in Phoenix, as well as some of the elected officials up there and some of the lobbyists and what they think can work. The biggest thing that I believe historically drags us down is the concept of these late early ballots, the ones that are dropped off at the polling place.
We are in violent agreement on that one, Ted.
And there's an easy fix to one, and it's one that I think what Senator Peterson and the rest of now looks like it's going to be a two-person majority in both chambers of the state legislature, which sometimes actually helps finding a little more collaboration and cooperation. But what I hope they remember is whatever they do, it needs to get signed by the governor. The governor's not expressed a lot of desire to do any changes that she believes will hinder the ability for folks to vote.
To your point, the news article that I used as the basis for the thing I did talked about how she vetoed a bill. I guess they wanted to use the same kind of ID requirements for an in-person voter if you dropped your ballot off on election day or after the Friday before election day after that.
And I think that is one. I think that's the solution that you most often hear about. If we can address it, and there's two ways to do it. One, the Florida technique is if you don't have it in, if it's not received by the county recorders or whoever they submit their ballots to by the Thursday prior, it's automatically a spoiled ballot.
Okay.
It's done. And that means the only chance they've got is that those folks have to show up and vote in person through the normal ID process, which is viable. To me, the simplest solution is if you drop a ballot off anytime between set a date, Thursday on, that's an early ballot.
Mm-hmm.
One ballot, one ID. The person that's receiving it can verify the signature just like we do for everybody that shows up at the polls, takes it out of that envelope, signs it as verified, and it now goes right in the batch and immediately gets counted.
Unfortunately, this is my opinion. It just seems like we're just doing too much the have it your way approach, where you can do it anything and there's no limitations either way. If you're going to vote early, you vote early. And this gets back to what you're saying. If you're going to vote early, vote early. And there should be some sort of a deadline in place. If you're going to vote, if you're going to choose to go that route, you know, you've got to get it in, because it adds X number of days with the signature verification process. Once they've verified this, they feed them through a machine that opens the envelopes, and with its 2-page ballot, I'd heard that some of the ballots got pulled out in that stage. So anyway, because there is a processing aspect to dropping off a signed, whatever you want to call it, an early ballot, a mail ballot, because there's extra processing time on that, I do think that there should be a different rule for that.
I fully agree with it. And that's the point of doing the ID drop off. If you make an ID be shown when you drop off about versus sending it in and meeting the date requirement, because I do think there needs to be a date requirement.
Mm-hmm.
That ID, it's the same thing as everybody else.
It's
walking
a great
in.
Point.
And you can make it, some people are going, oh, but then I'm going to have to wait in the line with all the other voters. People want convenience here, and that's the problem. Voting isn't meant to be convenient all the time. It's meant to be your right and your responsibility. You have to go do it. But that doesn't prevent us from having two lines, one for the early drop-offs. It's probably going to be the shorter line. You probably don't need as many people working it. And all they're doing there is verifying that you showed an ID for it and then taking it out of the mail-in ballot and putting it in with the rest. There's ways to do this, and it's got to be something that I believe, and I do believe, that it's to the point where both parties now recognize that it doesn't help Arizona at all to go through what we've gone through for the last 7 days, still counting. I mean, at least now we know who the U.S. Senator from the state of Arizona is going to be, pending potential lawsuits, as Chris talked about a lot this morning. But we know who the U.S. Senator is going to be. We've now got a declaration of who the Congress member from CD6 is going to be. And we're still waiting on LD17. But there are, and there may be a couple other ones out there. But we've got to improve the system. And the current system's not working. I can tell you my daughter's primary ballot was rejected because of her signature, and she had to go through the process of getting it again. So they are doing that. But the whole system, even to cure it, man, has become so ridiculous because the parties are highly engaged in it. They're out there trying to help get their people who are showing up on the cure list to verify it's them. And that goes back to what Chris's conversation with Scott McMahon was about this morning. And if you want to listen to a very interesting interview, that's a good one to use their podcast for. And it comes back to what they were talking about. The more the parties get engaged with the gathering, the counting, the selection, the more it's an attempt to manipulate it towards your side. That's how you play games. That's how you do it.
That works.
And so we got to fix that. But what I do want to do is thank everybody who's gone out and vote. The turnout was high.
Right.
It was well. I'd encourage everybody 2 years from now, get even more informed, because what we saw was a lot of down ballot voting was just straight party tickets. You can see that in Pima County. It's a perfect example. I know the ballots are long. I know there's a lot to learn, but a lot of times if you don't know, just don't mark that box, would be my opinion, but that's just my opinion. So we're going to take a break now. When we come back, we'll have Danette Bewley, the president CEO, and I think I've got that title right, of the Tucson Airport Authority. And we'll talk all things about TIA, what the services they provide, what's going on there, and what's in store for the future. So please stay with us, and we'll see you in a few minutes on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Welcome back. You're listening to Jump In Tucson. This is the Engagement Hour. I'm Ted Maxwell. And my guest today is going to be Danette Bewley, the president and CEO, I've got that correct, of the Tucson Airport Authority. Danette, this show is about trying to get folks involved, and that's involved in the community, involved in organizations that make an impact. We try to honor the engagement of service members, of veterans, of first responders, of educators, but we also recognize that there's a lot of giving back to the community when you're leading a large organization that directly impacts the community, such as TAA. And real quick, just at the front, can you give me a quick definition of What's the difference between the Tucson Airport Authority and Tucson International Airport? Some people get confused that you hear TIA, TAA. What are they? Are they the same? Can just quick definition of that one.
Okay, thanks. Good morning, Ted. Thank you for having me on your show.
It's great to have you here.
The Tucson Airport Authority is the organization that operates, manages, maintains, and develops Tucson International Airport and Ryan Airfield. So that's the difference. The TUS, which is the three-letter code for Tucson International Airport, is one of the airports. Ryan is the other. And the TAA runs both of those airports for the benefit of Southern Arizona.
So effectively, you really are the CEO of TIA and of Ryan in some way.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So that actually even helps me. And I'm a pilot that flies into both those airfields and I spent a lot of time flying on the airfield. We're going to get into the story about what's going on at the airport, what all the different functions that you manage and serve out at that airport and the role it plays in our economy, probably after the bottom of the hour. But I want to take the first segment and get to know a little bit more about your journey. What was it that got you, as a young woman growing up in a military family, with the idea of eventually getting into aviation?
Well, it's actually quite simple. I was born and raised in San Diego, California. San Diego is a military town, and my dad was a naval aviator at NAS Miramar. I know it's no longer NAS, it's now MC, a Marine Corps station, but at the time, that's where Fighter Town USA was. So I was born in the era of the 60s when there was a lot going on all over the world, a lot of global conflict. And my dad was away a lot, flying all the time, and I found that fascinating. And when he would come home, I was just, you know, interested in what did he do? Where did he go? How did he do it? What did he fly? How do you fly? And we just had really great conversations since when I was a little girl. And to be honest, I told Ted this, I didn't know there was any other career choice. I just fell in love with aviation, and that's been my path. Now, my mom is also a big influence. She was a flight attendant for Eastern Airlines. It's kind of the stereotype where the pilot meets the flight attendant.
The fighter pilot. Let's clarify that.
The fighter pilot. And so aviation did run in the family. And you know, as I grew up, you know, I really fell in love with the military. And it was just one of those goals I had to also join the military. And went to college, got my degree in airport aviation management, and then became a pilot. And then my journey into the armed forces was a little different because the Navy has a very different attitude, or they did at that time, about women pilots. I was a little too early for today's times. So I might have made it today, but I didn't make it like almost 40 years ago.
Well, being the daughter of a fighter pilot, you said, I want to be a fighter pilot. And they said, you can't do that yet. And it would have been a different journey. I don't want to leave from the service of your family in during Vietnam, and including your uncle.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a lot about Naval Air Station Miramar, now Marine Corps Air Station Miramar, Fighter Town USA. It truly was the beginnings and the home of Top Gun.
Yes, it was.
Which everybody knows now. And your family's got some direct impact on that. Can you kind of tell us that story?
Well, sure. There was a detachment to the Navy was VFAW-3 that my dad was a part of, it, as was my dad's best friend. I also refer to him as my uncle, as Dan Pedersen. And they used to go out into the desert and compete against each other, and they dogfight. And the award, whoever was the best pilot that day, that contest was called the Top Gun. And later on, you know, a number of years later, when they were in Vietnam and our pilots were suffering great losses, they went back to the drawing board and started to use some of the tactics that these guys had developed just over Yuma. And Dan Pedersen was tapped to be the person to lead that squadron. And of course, he named it Top Gun.
Yeah, he's got a book out there that he's written. I've been had the honor to meet him because of my relationship with Danette. And it's a book I definitely read if you're interested in aviation and how it went back, because I think people forget, and the F-4, which was the premium fighter during the Vietnam War, it was built without an internal gun. And the idea that missiles, and I mean, we look back now and think of how archaic the missiles were back at that time, but that missiles would mean we would never have to go see another aircraft face to face, turned very south very quick. And so they did have to develop Top Gun. And that was kind of the start of making sure that even modern aircraft, modern fighter aircraft, have the abilities to go all the way from the long range missile shots all the way to the in tight dogfight. So that's you're getting me talking.
To that point, my dad was assigned to Naval Missile Test Center in Point Magoo, and he was working with Raytheon on their missiles. And he said that was very interesting time because as a pilot, you have a very different perspective than the people that design the product the pilots use. So there's a lot of learning involved.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we've still got about 4 minutes till we've got a hard break at the bottom, a little over 4 minutes till the bottom of the hour. So let's talk now about how you got involved. So Navy didn't work out, you couldn't be a pilot like you wanted to be, at least not in the aircraft you wanted to be. And yeah, you had gotten a degree already in aviation management. So how did you get to the point where you're now running a major airport with a major military operation on its side?
You know, I think, my path was this path. Although my heart wanted me to be a pilot, I guess the different path was just to follow what was possible. So I continued going to school while I figured my life out. And fortunately, my degree program landed me in an air traffic control setting in Oklahoma City, where I was learning to be an air traffic controller. That wasn't really my passion, so I decided to not pursue that. And I came back to San Diego and did what anybody does, go down to the airport and apply for a job. And I was so lucky. I was selected to a very low-level entry position at San Diego International Airport. And then I just grew my career from there. And I spent 14 years at San Diego International. And then I was headhunted to go run Jacksonville International Airport. That's in Florida. And that was about 2.5 years I stayed there when I got tapped by a very really important CEO in my life who ran the Reno Tahoe Airport. She'd been watching me my whole career, and she was a mentor to me. And she invited me to join her team. So I did that for 5.5, 6 years. And then a Tucson job came available, and so I competed for that job and came to Tucson. Now I've been here 12 and a half years in the Tucson Airport Authority.
So you've had quite a bit of experience throughout, like you said, San Diego, Jacksonville, Reno. When you came to Tucson, what was your first thought when you saw the airport and you saw what we do here?
I thought there was a lot of potential. And I was really looking forward to being a part of that to make it better. My goal is always to make it better than I found it. And the fact that it was a shared-use facility with the Air National Guard was just a bonus. I love the military, so I was very interested in, helping and forged some really positive relationships with the team at the Air National Guard.
Well, I know that the team is glad to have you there. Obviously, as a former commander of the Arizona Air National Guard and along flying F-16s out at TIA for many years, we really appreciated having a CEO came in who understood the importance of the military. But that does create some challenges for you.
Well, it does. Your operation as a military pilot is a little different than the commercial aviator. For instance, commercial aviation doesn't need a barrier arresting kit on the runway, whereas the fighter jets do. I think we might be the only commercial service airport with box on all of the runways. I think the first time one of our inspectors for the FAA came out, they were really just perplexed, and they're like, "What's this doing here?" And we're like, "Yes, it's an acceptable solution for meeting our users' needs."
Yeah. So a BOC is a resting cable where if you see tail hooks that they use to land on carriers, Air Force versions have a slightly lighter tail hook, and we can use it to stop us before we run off the end of the runway. Luckily, we haven't had that happen very often.
That is true.
But it is a challenge for you. So that's a great lead-in. And when we come back, Danette, I'd really like to dive into what is currently the activity. There's a lot of construction going on in the airport. There's a lot of things going on. And I think you understand the power of economic development through the airport. So thank you for being with us. We'll be back after the bottom of the hour break. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Good morning and welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is the Engagement Hour. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, and that's Matt Neely, always finding music that applies to the topic we've got going on today. So my guest today is Danette Bewley, the president and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. As we learned in the first hour, the reason they're the authority is they run multiple airports, both TIA, which is the one everybody's familiar with, and then Ryan Airfield, which is out to the west of Tucson, a smaller but very important regional airport, especially for those of us who like to still fly general aviation. So we won't be not flying the F-16s anymore, but I still love flying the little single prop aircraft. So Danette, since you've been there, there's been a lot going on. I mean, you've incorporated a lot of local foods into the spectrum of the airport itself, so we can go down there and we can have Noble Hops, we can a lot of different locations. But there's also been a lot of energy you've put into getting both federal funds and federal opportunities to actually help our airport grow. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of construction that's been going out there. So what's currently going on out there, and what's your vision?
Oh man, I have a really big vision.
Not
enough money to go along with my vision. Right now we're in the middle of an airfield safety enhancement program. And what that involves is...
Yeah, that's a fancy term for fixing things.
But. Yeah, that's a fancy term for fixing our runway system. FAA standards have changed over the years, and our airfield had some geometry issues. So we just demolished a runway. Most people don't know we have a parallel runway at Tucson, except for our parallel runway was rather small, didn't support or serve the military or commercial aviation. So we have demolished it and we have relocated it, and now we're building a parallel runway that's actually the same as our primary runway. This is a safety and standards project, so we meet the safety directives of the FAA, but we also add capacity. This has been really efficient, too, for, you know, air carrier traffic and military traffic, because when we're all done, there'll be room for everybody to operate nearly simultaneously. And I know the Guard has some real big plans. They just finished part of the project and partnering with us on an end-around taxiway and arm-de-arm pad, which is the largest in the nation, 14 positions.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point about the size and the enormity of it. What a lot of folks don't understand, there are a lot of airports throughout the U.S. that have a Guard unit associated with them, but generally that's a single squadron. So they've got about 24 aircraft. Out at the 162nd, being a training unit, training both U.S. international pilots, it's got a test center affiliated with it, and now it's also got some foreign aircraft on the line. Almost 80 F-16s flying the most busy military operation outside of perhaps Luke Air Force Base and some of the larger bases. And you've been doing that for decades on a single long runway.
Right, right. Yeah, it's been challenging. Working with the military to look at the schedule of our commercial flight schedule, they work in between that so everybody can coexist peacefully. And as you mentioned, with the one runway, we had to be very efficient if there was any kind of a problem with an aircraft, say a flat tire or anything else. We've got to get them off the runway quick because there's other people coming behind them. So it's a real operation there on the airfield with our airside operations team. But going back to the project, at the end of the project, we will have the parallel runways, and we still have a crosswind runway. And what that's going to give us is capacity probably for the next 60 years. And all the studies show that it, you know, we're poised for growth. Right now, we're servicing about 4.1 million passengers each year, which is a real big step up from the pandemic. I remember one day we only had 3 flights, and that was a really dark day. A little reminder and reminiscent of the 9/11 experience, only I knew this one would be longer. And it was. It took us a while to climb back out, but now we're at about 68, 69 flights per day. We're leading in our peer airport category. We have high fare performance, high load factor, which the airlines love. And they're bringing in more airplanes. They're bringing in bigger airplanes. They're bringing in more frequency to the routes they serve, and slowly adding new routes back into the mix. So while I can't name a carrier, but we have a new carrier starting here in
That's
March.
A tease.
I know, we can't say. They have to announce first. But this just shows the growth of our community and what's happening around the Tucson region. You know, it's all driven by the data of what's happening in Tucson, how many people live here, how many people are flying, and how they're choosing to fly. The airlines look at the data very carefully, and we also share the data with the airlines and our perspective of what's happening in our local region so that we can add some color to the conversation and maybe convince them to put an aircraft or a flight in the Tucson market instead of another market.
So there's always been a discussion of trying to increase the nonstop service. Obviously, it's a challenge when you're going back east or you're going on a long-haul nonstop service. But the number of nonstop available flights at TUS, at Tucson International, has actually increased over the years. And it's also increasing to markets that you can't get to easily if you go up to Phoenix or go elsewhere. You want to talk about a little bit about your strategy on continuing this growth and use of the Fly Tucson program of flying locally, supporting your local airport?
Yeah, I do. You know, we do have community members who choose to use Phoenix Sky Harbor as their airport of choice or Mesa Gateway. And, the airfares aren't all that different. And I think people think the nonstop is, you know, more beneficial to them. But when you really consider having to get up at 2 a.m, then drive for 2 hours and hopefully there's no traffic and hopefully there's no accident. Then you get there. I just find that to be super stressful. And then you park at $33 a day in Phoenix versus like 12 at Tucson. So, I mean, there's a lot of things. If you really do all the math, it can work if you stay local. What the airlines see is when you look at our website or you look at an airline flying out of Tucson, they see that you looked and they know that, okay, this person went here first and then they decided to go to Phoenix for whatever reason. That helps us because they're looking at the data. Sometimes the leakage, we can't compete because we don't have the airline that a person flies on or maybe the service at all or the connection. So, but for those areas that we can compete, we can get to 410 plus destinations around the world with one stop. And I don't know about the people that are listening. I don't mind a stop. I need to stop and stretch my legs.
Well, there's no doubt. I want to cover the point you just brought up because I found that extremely interesting. Did not even realize that's something the airlines look at. And that is they check where you look first. So at a minimum, I want to encourage all of our listeners to look at TUS first, see what the options are, get the data in there, because if the airlines are truly thinking about coming back and giving us either a direct flight or more service to a specific location, they need to see that we're looking at wanting to do that locally.
Yeah, they do. So we have marketing efforts to target certain areas, Marana and Oro Valley. There's a lot of leakage. Leakage is when people go to another airport that's not in their immediate region. And sometimes we have what's called spillage, which means the people did try to go to our airport, but they couldn't get a flight. Then they still choose to go to a different airport. So we're kind of in that leakage spillage mode where it's actually a blessing and a curse. And again, the airlines look at all of that. And the one thing that is challenging right now, if you've heard over the last couple of years, there was a pilot shortage, and now there's an aircraft shortage. And so there's limited pieces of aircraft, or we call it metal, out there. And we compete for that metal. And I have no issue trying to snake an airplane out of another market to Tucson. And we do that a lot because the data tells the story. We are a stronger yield for the market. And, you know, we're expanding our marketing, you know, not just in the Tucson community. People know we have an airport where we're marketing in partnership with Visit Tucson to other areas of the nation where we're enticing people, hey, come travel to Tucson and here, use Tucson International Airport and then go with what Visit Tucson says for, you know, different things to do in Tucson. And we're getting a lot of market share from the recreational side.
So where do you think just off the top of your head, not trying to get any insight on the new carrier or anything, is where do you think the markets that we've got the most opportunity to expand service out of Tucson are in the next year or two?
Well, I don't know if it's the most opportunity, but it's our target markets. We'd like to get a Boston.
That'll probably make it the most opportunity if you're targeting it.
Yeah, I'm targeting Boston, and we're targeting New York, and we're targeting Washington, D.C., not DCA, Washington National, Reagan. We have to go to Dulles. There's a restriction on Washington, DCA airport. And so the only airport we can fly to is Dulles. So that's on our list as well. We're also talking to Canadian carriers and Mexican carriers. Those are also part of our strategy as well.
And I think that's a great strategy on the side. I've been exposed recently to more Canadian carriers that really do a lot both in the U.S. and a lot internationally. Not encouraging people to use a Canadian carrier versus an American carrier. Let's kill, you know, put that out there. But there are opportunities for growth. And what I like about your approach is you're looking at what's best for Tucson.
Right.
And
right.
What's best for this region.
And it's viable. You know, we have to show the data. Airlines are not just going to put an aircraft in our market and hope it works. They need to see what the data presents that, because they can put that airplane anywhere.
Imagine that. Data and numbers matter. And that's we could go over the history of some failed efforts at the airport and the community, the business communities had. And it all goes back to the data. And ultimately, it also goes back to the dollars. And that's a challenge, because both are in the data can be plentiful, but the dollars sometimes are in short availability. So that's the voice of Danette Bewley, the president and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. I encourage you to tune in tomorrow. I don't have his guest yet, but Grant Kruger will be hosting Jump in Tucson at 9:00. And stay with us, because when we come back, we'll talk about what the future expansion at TAA may look like. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is the Engagement Hour. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, and with me today is the president and CEO, Danette Bewley of the Tucson Airport Authority. Before we've got a question from a caller. Before we go to that, though, I want to take a second and talk about Rockin' for Heroes. It's something that Matt was at, you were at, I was at. It was a great event this weekend, honoring Veterans Day event put on by Mike and Bonnie Quinn. And anybody who listens to KVOI has heard them on it a lot. But it was just a great reminder to me of seeing people show up and recognize both first responders, both military members serving, both the veterans and Gold Star families. But for me, it's always special when you have the opportunity to recognize a World War II veteran. And one of the four military members we honored, one Vietnam World War II vet, two Korean War veterans, and a Vietnam veteran, was a 96-year-old gentleman, Don Sloan, who had served back in World War II as a military policeman in Europe. And it's just the joy he got out of being there and the opportunity for him to stand up and be recognized by several thousand people for what his service, which occurred for many of us a lifetime ago, was just truly, and we're losing those opportunities on World War II vets.
Yeah.
And that said, Danette, you have an event going on out at the airport today. I just want to make sure we plug one more time.
Right, right. Honor Flight will be coming back from Washington, D.C. And this is very special because it gives those veterans a chance to go to D.C. to the Veterans Memorial and then return back to Tucson or wherever their honor flight originated from. But ours today is a Tucson group. So it's really touching.
And I believe that time's about 5:30 roughly for their departure. I know Matt, Chris brought it up earlier, the time that they're going to the plane's going to be
6:10, I think, 6:10. Is the scheduled landing. Yeah. And they're saying gather at 5:30 is what I've gotten.
Right, right. Yeah, media
upper
is
level,
already
upper level, yeah.
And if you've never been to either the departure of the flight and when the veterans are making their way or the return, it's just truly amazing. It is something you need to see. And so I encourage anybody that can go down to Tucson International Airport and support those veterans that are returning from their honor flight.
You know, a couple of years ago, I had a trip to D.C., and I took my dad with me, a veteran, and we spent the free time I had going to all the memorials, looking at, you know, the different war memorials. And it was really, I was touching. It was the first time he'd ever been to the Vietnam Memorial, not the first time to D.C. because he was an airline pilot. He'd been everywhere. But that was really touching and meaningful for him because he saw names on that wall that served with him.
And it's important to remember, I was talking with a Korean War veteran this weekend, and they were saying, well, I've already been to D.C. I was talking about an honor flight if he had taken one. He goes, I've been to D.C. and I've seen that. But the thing was, when he was in D.C., it was before the Korean War Memorial was there. It was before the Vietnam Veteran Memorial was there. So a lot of them don't understand. And when they do go back, it's that thank you and it's that magnitude. And everybody on the flight lived the same journey. They were all served. So thank you for supporting Honor Flight as much as you do out there. Yeah. We're going to go to Bruce Ash. He's called in with a question. And Bruce, welcome to Jump in Tucson. This is a first.
Yeah, hi. Bruce Ash, TAA Emeritus member. A couple of comments and a question. First, I probably make 20 to 24 flights, general aviation, in and out of Tucson Airport every year. And the general aviation facilities and the whole way that we're treated and so on is great. And I appreciate everything that that this airport affords for people who are flying general aviation. Second is I love the idea that there might be a flight to Dulles. My wife and I would be the first people signing up for any flight because we have our son, his family, and two of our grandchildren back there in rural Virginia, and it's about 30 minutes away from their house as opposed to schlepping back and forth out of Reagan.
Well, we're trying, so and I'll be on the flight with you.
Yeah. Okay. And then lastly, a question. I go to Albuquerque on a regular basis, and now I'm okay flying on our plane there. But it is very expensive to do that, obviously, with one person in the plane besides the pilot. And my question is, air service, we used to have two flights a day back and forth to Albuquerque. If I was to take commercial, I'm basically, it's a day and a half to 2 days between having to go around and about to get there and around and about to get back. Any chance that we're going to have better direct service from Tucson to Albuquerque in the near future?
Well, that's unlikely. Were you on Southwest back in the day?
Southwest, yeah. America West, you know, when it was flying and so on. And it was a great, I could zip in, zip out, and not have a problem. Now it's like a 2-day deal.
Albuquerque was a very popular route for Southwest Airlines because there was a law in Texas called the Wright Amendment where politics got involved, and any Southwest plane had to land in an adjacent state before going to Texas on the way in and on the way out. That really helped Albuquerque's market increase. But that sunsetted, you know, possibly 10 years ago, and once Southwest had the opportunity to not continue that route where they could go nonstop to Dallas or Houston, they dropped the Albuquerque. And unless the data is strong enough to show that there's a lot of connection between Tucson and Albuquerque, it's unlikely.
Yeah. Well, tough on me, I guess. I'll just have
sorry.
Not extra time or extra expense. But thanks very much. You're doing a great job.
Oh, thank you, Bruce. I appreciate that.
All right. We've got thank you, Bruce. We're going to have to hold. Now I've got a good excuse to bring you back. So we've got about 30 seconds left. Can you tell me what the folks that live in this region can do to support the airport?
Fly Tucson, fly local. Try to book your seats out of Tucson. And if you absolutely can't, then we understand going to another airport. But it's important to support your local airport. You know, if we don't have your support, we can lose flights. And we don't want to lose flights. We want to grow and compete with the rest of the nation's airports. We're a very big economic driver in this region, so it's important to have a strong and healthy airport. Fly local, fly Tucson.
And that's the truth. That's Danette Beely. Danette, thank you for joining me today. Please, everyone, tune in each and every day to Jump in Tucson right after Wake Up Tucson. Everybody have a good week, and we'll talk to you next week.